So good morning. Good morning, hackers, nerds, and geeks. So this is Lightning Talks on day 3 in room 3, and we are not ready. So it's like usual, we are not completely ready. We still have to do some processing, so we are running a little late. Reminder for next year, we really like to have the first slot so we can set up all this these things here properly and have some more time with you as the speakers. Yes, a reminder, if you're a speaker or wanted to speak, please come up here or to first row and sit with us. We are trying to process all the requests that we have. So, like, did you get my slides and is it online? The good news is we now have a presentation PC. Okay. The bad news is we just picked it up, so there's no slides on it yet, and I just managed to go online with it. Yes, so we must be running a little late. Just in case, today there's not so many people there, just I would say half full. Still, most of you will just sit down at the side. I would like to make room a little more. So please help me in the seat defragmentation algorithm. So if you see an empty spot next to you towards the middle, please take it. So just please rise a little and move inside. That would help a lot. Thank you very much. So yes, so if the guys at the side would please move inside, that would be very nice. Please move inside. Thank you. The usual announcements, if you happen to watch the stream, we would like to know about its quality. Please give us some feedback on this. Please join us for chatting on IRC on the network Freenode and join the channel 20#26C3LT for Lightning Talks, LT. And yes, please post something there. If you can find anything worthwhile to mention about a talk, some URL, please post it there. We try to pick this up and add it to the documentation. Right now, the wiki doesn't have too much info, just the language of a talk, a last name or nickname, and its title. Of course, that doesn't say much. We've been we've been requesting the abstracts, actually, and we want to put this online. Unfortunately, there's some typos in it, or it's not clear, or the URL that was given for this doesn't work. So that's still in processing. And unfortunately, this will be post-processing for now. We'd like you to answer the email. We want to put this online, so hopefully for the last day we will be upfront with abstracts and everything. So look forward to this. We do welcome feedback, even if it's just when will this be online for the 100th time. But still, if you can contribute to anything or would like to give a talk yourself, please contact us and write us an email to 26c3@lightningtalks.de, right? So we still have some slots for tomorrow. Today is already pretty full, unfortunately, just the thing, the timeline. We haven't done that yet, so there were a few more requests on changing this. So I just give an interrupt to Oliver here. Who will be the first one to speak? Oh, yes, we need the microphones. Do we still, Audio Angel, do we have microphones? Like the headsets? We had two headsets. That would be great. Right.
No. So I'm just asking for some speakers because they didn't show up at my table. Style and Georg, are you here? Lip, CPU?
Michael is going to come a little bit later.
Okay. 3D scanner, are you here?
The guy for this. Yeah. Das musst du dann schon sagen. Mach das
mal. Okay. I'm still looking for the guy who's talking about the Unistrike.
Pablo, he's coming.
Okay. And yeah, Then Geeks in History and CSN.org.it, Florian, Missing in Action. Neutrino?
Neutrino was here, but he's talking tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
He was scheduled.
As you can see, this is all very last minute. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, that's almost everybody's here.
Uh-huh. So. Ja, dann baue ich meine Liste, wer anfängt.
Ja, TXT-Datei. Schedule, Day 3, Day 4, TXT. So, if you have internet connection and if you're looking at the 26C3 wiki, we will have a slightly shift in the schedule for day 3 because two lightning talkers request to have their own laptops for their presentation. So we are trying to move them at the end of the English lightning talks. So then people who don't understand German can leave the lightning talks if they like, because all the lightning talks after that will be hopefully all in German, if nothing bad happens like yesterday. You need the cable.
Yep, the cable and everything. And this.
Anschrauben oder nicht?
Falls die Batterie sind, sind ja auch Ersatzbatterien. Ja. Ja. Ruf die 41. Das soll oben anrufen.
Of course, this would be. I still have to copy the stuff over. So, as we said yesterday, you can actually come here up here and grab the microphone to do your own announcements. So if you still are looking for people to meet, like for whatever topic, this is your chance. While I'm doing your copying, you can come up here and say, so who's interested in this copy, in this program or system or project, and meet me. So if you would like to do this, or would you come up stage? Okay.
You say your name and what the topic is. Mm-hmm. All right, and then
you have free USB.
Just to I got that. Mm-hmm.
Ubuntu. Yeah, maybe you can run it.
Is it it's Gentoo, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because you can run a dmask just to see how the system. Okay, so I just...
It's registered and...
Hello. Ah. Well, good morning to all.
Loud.
Yeah. My name is Servando. I came from Spain, but I live here in Berlin. I was teaching a workshop yesterday and today about plug-and-play sensor input in the computer. So this is one of my devices I built. You can see in the console is plug and play. You just plug in the system and it's recognized without drivers or anything. And the cool thing about this, the brain of this thing is a microcontroller that I'm selling for 20 euros. So, well, I will be in the hardware hacking zone. The cool thing is that in a very cheap and easy way, you can connect any sensor to your computer to improve your program. For example, with this has accelerometers, infrared sensors, potentiometers, buttons. But you can do many things with it. So, yeah, I wanted to... I don't have my connectors here. I could make a short demonstration of how easy it is to connect this to my computer. It has a accelerometer, like the one that is included in the Wii. So I just plug this into the computer, and in less than 1 minute, I'm moving a 3D model, like moving this thing. that is done with an empty CD box. So my site is minitronics.net. Maybe I can write here. And my address is info@minitronics.net. I will be around these days, and no drivers needed for this, but I did some abstractions to work with free software Pure Data that is multi-platform, free and open. So I have abstractions to communicate with other softwares and control via OSC or MIDI, so you can do your model in Blender and control with this via PD. So that's the another web about this Pure Data software I was talking about. And if anybody of you knows this software, PD is a graphical programming environment. So it's really easy to work with it. The objects are like boxes, and you connect them with cables. And there's libraries to do many things, like computer vision, 3D, video stuff. And there's a group that we created recently in Berlin. So inside puredata.info, there's a community place, and this we will meet like twice a month more or less here in Berlin to just code and share patches and music and video and whatever. So well, thank you for your attention, and
sorry. Hello. Okay. Sorry again for all this fuck up, but we have to change the schedule again. The guys who want to present with their own laptop, Polo, Casbon, or Native, can we use your laptop for the whole session? And again, all Lightning Talkers, please come to the first row. So if you're sitting somewhere behind, please sit in the first row. Okay, thanks. Sorry, guys, again. I'm sorry, really.
Testing.
So if you are not yet connected to IRC, if you're connected to the network, then please join us on IRC Freenode, on the Freenode network, and join the Lightning Talks channel. That's 26C3LT. There's also a page in the wiki about IRC, so if you can add some more info to that, I'd be very happy about this too.
Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
No. Is the headset on? Yeah? Ah, okay.
Huh? I'm hearing the headset. You can hear that? Yeah. Is that better?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Let us know when you're ready to
start. Okay, I'm ready to start, I think.
F5.
Just a moment.
Nein, es ist nur einer da.
Why is it
Ich glaube nicht. Ja. Ja. Da muss ich wieder gehen.
Okay, that looks reasonable. Okay, my 4 minutes start. Ready when I am, okay? I'll go now. Okay, I'm going to speak loudly if I start here. So, okay, I'm going to talk about a project in my 4 minutes called Where Does My Money Go? I'm from the Open Knowledge Foundation. This is a project that's just started. We just launched a prototype literally 2 weeks ago, and we're hoping to do a load more work in the new year. And what is it about? It's about analyzing and visualizing where my money goes when I pay taxes. Who here pays taxes? Not everyone, right? But quite a few of you. But probably eventually all of you will one day pay taxes. Perhaps not, but probably. And so what happens when you pay all that money to the government? Where does your money go? Right? Does it go to the defense? Does it go to healthcare? Where does it go to? And in the UK, there's an election in about May for the government, and right now obviously it's a big deal where money is going, particularly the UK has had serious financial issues recently. So what we built, our aim is to promote transparency and citizen engagement through analysis and visualization of information, because most average people turn off when they think about this stuff and they don't know what's going on. So what we did with some people called Iconomical, some really good guys in Amsterdam, is this is the top level of UK government spending. This is real data, and this is this app, and you can explore around. So one thing you can see pretty immediately that's kind of interesting is this is old age in the UK. Actually, we spend more on old age than we do on education, right? So basically, we spend more on the old than the young. You can also see some other interesting stuff, so like all that debt stuff. It's maybe not all there, but there's all of the public debt payments in the UK, £31 billion worth. Remember, that's just interest, basically, and loan repayment. That isn't the outstanding debt. That's what you're paying back out. You can do also some kind of other cool stuff, like you can look at regional information. So if you want to look at the overview, this is differences from the average. So like who's subsidizing who in the UK? Now, I know I'm in Germany, but you can do this for German regions, right? So this is saying that basically London contributes money, gets money in certain areas and contributes in other ones. This is spending per capita. So like London gets a lot of housing. Some really weird things for the UK. This area is mainly, in the UK, is mainly agricultural. Like it's not got anything particularly amazing. This is the northwest, and yet it's got this huge spending on defense, which we're not really clear what's going on there. So there's some really interesting things that come out of this. Just going back to the overview, you can zoom into areas, so you can kind of go through this. And one thing that we point out, by the way, we've done this, these are you might think, what the hell do these categories mean, particularly if you're not English? So, you know, some things is like, what's social exclusion? Now, that's both bad. Like, one big issue for this, for the general public, is de-jargonizing this information. But the other thing that's cool is that this is standard UN terminology, which is perhaps why it's so a bit meaningless. But it means that German spending is probably classified in the same way. So it means you could take the app that we have built and you could use it for Germany, or you could use it for Spain, or you could use it for Italy. So if there's anyone out there who wants to say, hey, I'm interested in where my money goes in my country, you can do this. Now, just one thing to say, the big challenge with this that's kind of both fun and difficult is about the data. Getting data out of government as to where money goes is not easy. And particularly, we'd like to know at the lowest possible level, how much money goes in contracts to this company? You know, how much are we spending on IT with Microsoft versus Linux contractors versus whatever, you know, or how much are we spending with this particular defense contractor? That's the kind of information we'd really like at a low level, and that's hard to get out of the government. I think I'm getting pretty close to time. So data is really interesting. And we've got kind of ideas, particularly in the UK. If you're from the UK and you're interested in this kind of stuff, we want to get a load more data. We want to improve the prototype. And we're really interested, do people have cool ways? How would your mother or your grandmother want to approach this data, right? And that's actually the hard problem here. It's easy to do this for people who are quite sophisticated or geeks. How do we do it for the general population in a way that can meaningfully affect, for example, political decisions, you know, how people vote? You know, what questions would your parents or your friends who aren't, you know, computer literate, if you like, what questions would, or data literate, what would they want to know? What interface would they want? Would they want a restaurant bill saying this is how much you, you know, would you really like to know your taxes? How much you, £1.50 went to, you know, old age, €3.40 went to defense. What interface should we give the world to have an impact here? Okay, I think I'm out. Am I out of time?
Email.
Okay, info@okfn.org or rufus.pollock@okfn.org, or you can drop us a line. There's a load of comment system on where does my money go. So just go to wheredoesmymoneygo.org. Okay, who wants to present next? Do you want? Does someone want to give me a USB stick of the people presenting? I think I talked for the.
That's fine because we have time.
Yeah, it's fine.
So the next speaker is.
I could talk more if you want.
Yeah, we all know. open RFID tag. Who? Pereira. Who's that? Is he here? That's you. Is that you?
Yes.
Good.
And just actually one last thing, is there anyone here who likes doing freedom of information requests in Germany or in other countries? Because this is a great area. Digging out government spending information is a great thing. Most governments, right, they must plan spending somehow, at least we hope so. But like in the UK, they have this big spending database, but they told us they can't give it to us under a freedom of information request.
I can't be heard,
but I was just saying, freedom of information requests, if you like doing them, public spending data is a great area to start. Yeah, Europe
no,
has...
No, wait, this is all going all wrong now. You can't be heard. So it's fine for the guys in here,
sure.
But not for the recording. So you must be heard. What about him? What about the headset? Please use it.
Okay.
What about this here? Sorry, but there's...
Sides with open spaces in the middle. Please move to the middle if your seat's in the middle available. Thank you.
This is on here, but I have to use it. So we need to put it here. Do we happen to have a donor stick?
Yeah.
That would be.
Sorry?
It's fine. Does it pop up? I hope it does pop up.
Please just make some noise for testing the mic.
Hello? Can you hear? Okay.
Has it popped up yet? Or?
No.
Wait.
And this here.
Do you know how to put it on full screen?
Yes.
Okay, ready when you are. You don't start the timer.
It's not. Ah, okay, it's good. Perfect. No, I can see here.
Yeah, but if it's. The dimensions is wrong, right?
Yeah, but in the screen is right.
Ah, okay.
Okay, good morning. Thank you for coming. My name is Ramiro Pareja, and I am going to talk to you about the Open RFID project. So, what is this? I think that this is not working. Well, the Open RFID is a universal programmable tag designed to test the security of an RFID implementation. With the proper firmware loaded, it can perform different attacks, attacks like an emulation, brute forcing. This is a little slow. Brute forcing, or even more complex attacks like a taming attack. Well, so you may ask why this project is different, because there are several similar projects out there. So, in first place, most of the other projects work with the high-frequency tags like MIFARE. And there are actually a lot of researchers working with those high-frequency tags. They are exposing, during the past year, they have exposed a lot of insecurity in this kind of device. However, Open RFID tag work with the less known and less studied low-frequency tags. Perfect, there is no animation. use your imagination for suppose that here there are some photos. No. Well, it's totally broken. Okay, some of those tags are like are the very cheap, the high tag or the EM4000 family. All of them commonly used for car immobilizers, animal tracking, or even door locks. So this device is intended to work with this kind of tags. It has been designed trying to do it as simple as and as clear as possible. So this results into a ultra-low-cost hardware. With just less than 12 euros, you can make an emulator or a brute forcer for this kind of device. Other features include ultra-compact size. This is the card. It's the size of a regular credit card. It is quite totally passive. It's powered through the electromagnetic file created by the reader. Easy firmware upgrading thanks to the RS232 bootloader or using the regular microchip tools. And it can support almost any tech working between 125 kHz and 155 kHz. It supports different encoding schemes and different data rates. So you can actually download from this web the firmware and the schematics for this device. But actually, there is only the light version available. This version supports only read-only tags. However, over the next month, will be available the normal version that supports read and write tags. There are also some kits available for build your own tag. In February, we'll be releasing a similar tool, OpenRFID Interface, which is a universal programmable sniffer, reader, writer, designed under the same preset, ultra low cost, simpleness. So, Everything this is released under GPL. If you need some more information, just go here and check it. Thank you very much for listening.
Okay, we are updating the wiki now, and we are updating a text file to display on the Beamer. And we know you were on time here, and we are very sorry because we worked until 4 in the morning and now have to change everything. And you know, we know you're angry and disappointed, but please don't attack our machine. It only takes longer. So just leave our machines alone. I have here some attacks, so please, I'm really sorry, but please don't attack the machine. We need it.
Geschickt oder so?
Nee, wir haben einen Link geschickt.
Einen Link geschickt, ja. Ich suche jetzt nach einem PDF, deswegen habe ich das nicht im Kopf, dass ich jetzt einen Link. Welchen Link habe ich denn?
Hast du Netz?
Nein? Okay. Sag das doch. Ich habe es einfach nicht alles.
Okay, dann machen andere vielleicht vorher und wir organisieren so lange die Folie.
Ja, nee, ich könnte ja das auch anstecken und das aufrufen, oder kann ich hier nicht dran arbeiten? Also, ihr habt das nur online.
Wir hatten das, genau, wir haben nur einen Link geschickt.
Deswegen. Wo war denn ich gerade auf dem Netz hier? We need to be online and we need to call up on the. Is this online?
We're missing some slides, so.
So. Is it easily.
What would you want me to do?
Basically, take the web browser and call up on the URL.
Yeah. Okay.
So, habt ihr einen kurzen Link dafür oder habt ihr irgendwie so einen, ich weiß es nicht mehr,
where do you want?
Längeren Link? Kann man da irgendwie sich hinklicken? Nee, ist nicht verlinkt. No. Mehr?
Test.
Thanks. Wie habe ich die Datei genannt? PDF. War das das?
Test.
Aha.
Here we are. Shall I just start off? We're ready.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear me? Okay. Go. Welcome. This is NG. I'm Patz. We'd like to give you a short introduction into Schleuder, which is a crypto mailing list manager with some remailer capabilities. Schleuder, by the way, is the German word for a slingshot. One word on the motivation for this talk. We want first to you to use it. We consider this working, stable, useful software, and there should be more use of privacy-enhancing software out there. Second, we want your feedback. We want bug reports. We want you to tear our code apart or rant about the usability or whatever. A short overview of the concept. First of all, it's designed as a tool for group communication by email. So a bunch of subscribers can use it as an ordinary mailing list manager, having an open PHP-enabled mailing list that takes care of redistributing encrypted content. But part of the plan is also to have an interface with the world, which means Schlotter can receive and send emails to the outside by specially crafted emails. So basically, it's from the inside an ordinary mailing list. From the outside, it's an ordinary mailbox or address or something. And by this means, it enables also groups, for example, to enhance their privacy and obscurity because they can hide behind this software, which is invisible from the outside. It's written in Ruby. It's really licensed under the GNU GPL version 2. And here are some more details.
It's completely MTA agnostic, so you can use it with any MTA. We know that it runs with Exim, Qmail, and Postfix, but you can also use it, hook it into Procmail or whatever. It identifies the mailing list members by their signature and not by their email address. So we use the cryptographic capabilities to identify the sender. it resends the mails as a new email, so it stripes off headers and so on. It is extendable through plugins. You can have plugins to send special command emails, to send emails to the outside, to do whatever you like to implement in your plugin. It works reliable so far. We have a couple of lists running with it, and it works great for us. The remote administration works through special crafted emails, or you can optionally have a web interface to administrate it, but this is totally optional, and you can administrate everything by sending signed and encrypted email. The web interface looks like that. Simple, you can just set the basic options.
Of course, there's some problems besides the not found bugs and the features missing, which is the last point already. First of all, you of course have to trust in the server. There's a private key on the server. This is a problem by design, one could say. We decided to do so because we found it still the most pragmatic and best working option. It means you have to really trust the server. And you, of course, shouldn't run this software without an encrypted file system, because at least at the moment, the secret key is stored on disk. We are discussing several solutions for it, but so far we haven't come up with any really reliable working. Same issue with scalability for large lists. We have lists with around 70 subscribers, which is not a problem. We expect problems when using it with several hundred subscribers. And, well, we also have ideas on that, but we need more research and experience. There's one missing. Right. That's it from us. We'd very much like you to use it. We'd very much like you to give us feedback and eat more chunky bacon. Please visit our website. Ask us, write us emails. We'll be around at the end of the talk, and we'll read the email the emails going to that address also in these days. So just contact us. Thank you very much.
Okay, next one is a lightning talk about clock tamer, and then after that, Sylvester will talk about chip tunes on microcontrollers. Is that okay? Sylvester, can you give me a sign? Okay, there you are. Good. So guys, finally we're getting in tune, we're getting in the mood. Sorry again, thanks for your patience, we love you.
Test, test.
Yeah, it works.
There we go.
Let's switch. Yes. No PPT, but PDF here. This one, yes. Oof. Hmm? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Hi, my name is Alexander Chemeris, and I'm here to present you a clock tamer project. Let's start. As it was mentioned several times during the Congress, USRP is a great tool for software-defined radio, but it has one big problem. It has a fixed reference clock, it's 64 megahertz, and many wireless protocols require different clocks. Just to list the few, and so we created this open software and open hardware project for high accuracy clock source, which may be useful for wireless and ham radio projects, for some wired communications, DC and DC converters, and some ham measuring equipment maybe. And the projects who already may get benefits from this is OpenBTS and AirProbe, which already were mentioned several times during the conference. And it's a highly configurable clock source, which may help you make your software-defined radio even more flexible than it was before. It may be controlled through the mini USB connector or through the SPI connection with a simple text-based control protocol, and you may tune it with up to 1 hertz precision, but that's just a current firmware limitation, and with later firmwares it should be possible to get the finer precision. It's also a universal clock source. There are many hardware options available. The standard version uses just one output, but you can get up to 6 outputs. You can get a locking to GPS. On the backside, we have a place for GPS module. You can get the external reference signal input if you have a very precise clock. You may get it to here, and you can get the VCO output, direct VCO output. For internal reference sources, we have a T6CO plus fractional PLL, or we can get VCT6CO plus DAC, which is useful for when you're using locking to GPS. Just some facts about the project. The current version, standard version of hardware, is 0.28 ppm accuracy, stability, and with GPS you can achieve up to 50 ppb precision, and with better math and firmware you can get below the 1 ppb stability. Just we need to implement some more math magic in firmware. And the source code is already available and Google code, and schematics will be published online sooner, I hope right after the Congress. We have two experimental boards for sale here. They look like this. And the final version of the hardware will be available in late February, and everyone who wants to buy it, just tell us. Oops. And we need some of your help if you're interested. There are, as usual, pretty much places which can be improved. And it's, as I mentioned, better mouse for GPS synchronization, more firmware features. It's we need some host library which can be used to simplify interaction with the hardware. I plan to write one myself, but if anyone wants to help, you're welcome. And we plan nice GNU Radio integration, because with this setup you can get you can talk through the SPI port to the clock timer. And if you have a nice GNU Radio, then you don't need any external cables to control your clocking source. That would be nice. We already have some prototype, but we need some nice GUI blocks for doing this from GRC. And we need your use cases. How do you use this? When do you use this, and why do you use this? Just to make it better. Oops. And that's our contact information. You can find us in GSM room on the second floor. Or you can call me with this local extension if GSM network is up, because I am using GSM phone. But the safest one is just get to GSM room. We are 90% time there. Thanks. That's all.
Yes, so it's good news, bad news. Again, the good news is we've managed to come up with the schedule. We put it online, including all the slides, and now we can't go online again. That's the bad news. So we try to do this all locally now. No. He removes this. It's going away.
I've got to play some chiptune later from the speaker. Have I just attached the microphone to the speaker?
Na, ihr hattet euch zugeschickt und wäre es ja hier schon mit dabei.
Vielleicht. Ja, das habe ich in der letzten Minute zugeschickt.
Ah, gut, ja, dann bitte früher. Dann. Hilft. Okay, Dinner? Right. Warte bitte noch auf ein Foto.
Test.
Die Eins, ja.
Test.
Auf alle Fälle so laut sprechen, dass.
überhörst und denkst, oh, das ist zu laut. Das ist genau richtig. Okay?
Okay, so I am Sylvester. I'm gonna talk about microcontroller-based chip tunes. I'm from Karlskiste, Kiel, which is a local chaos trap in Kiel. So, this is an example implementation of a hardware chip tune. It consists of a microcontroller. That's a Atmega 168 running at 8 megahertz. The digital to analog converter is actually a R2R resistor ladder. The only thing you have to do is connect 5 volts of DC power to it and connect it to your amplifier, and it just plays some chip tune, as I'm gonna show you. More things to say about this project. This project is actually based on Linus Eckerson's hardware chiptune project, which was pretty inspiring, and it was a real great experience to work with it. And I've just decided to compose this tune, which is actually inspired by a C64 game. Yeah, and what I'm gonna do is make an Arduino shield. So if you want to make chip tunes with your Arduino, you can get a Arduino shield for that. Okay, so this is my contact information in case you want to get in contact with me. If you get any questions, you can ask me after the talk. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, next talk is Monsieur W. Oh, I'm sorry. Next talk is Monsieur W. And after that, I'm sorry, we hear about the web application fingerprinter. Are you ready? Are you there? Okay, good.
You know these USB sticks that look cute and are really a little bit thicker than usual? they don't work when the USBs are next to each other. So, yeah, don't buy this.
Not mine. Can anyone hear me? Can you hear me?
No.
No? Okay. Can you hear me? Okay.
As a general rule, if you think it's too loud, it's good.
Okay.
if you don't hear yourself, it's bad.
Okay.
So, yeah, take a minute.
Okay, I'm going to talk to you about a Linux distribution named Hackable One. It's intended for the embedded platforms. It implements the GNOME mobile platform, that is GTK, gconf, dbus, Evolution Data Server, and so on. We use Debian as a base. That means you can have any Debian package. They are built for a lot of architectures, like the ARML one. We are using MDebian as a toolchain for the cross compilation, which come with a handful sets of a compiler toolchains and so on, libraries compiled for the ARML. Okay. What is our goal? We want to set a Debian mobile distribution that is capable of running on a wide set of embedded phones, like the OpenMoko FreeRunner. You may know it. We want to also to port it on other devices in the near future. We use the GNOME software stack and guidelines to achieve that. That means we are following the GUI handlines, the HED handlines, and so on. So, like I said, we are using MDebian for the toolchain part. We also have wrote our own script for the packaging system and build system. The GUI part will be built up from the software stack that was made by OpenMoko and OpenHand. There's a very good set of libraries putting GTK, Evolution Data Server, and so on together. And for the phone stack part, we will use freesmartphone.org or FSO. For now, we are not using it, but our work in the next month will be to port the existing applications to FSO. FSO is an API for it's a middleware for device related for phone related stuff and device like accelerometers, GPS, and so on. So next to the Lightning Talks, I will be running a Hackable One workshop to show how to make a package for Hackable One. It's as easy as to make a Debian package, but I will show you how is our toolchain. You will be able to port your applications to Hackable One if they are not already packaged in Debian stable. And come and ask me if you have any question. So the contact is at the website is track.hackableone.org. You can send me a mail, or you can also subscribe to the mailing list. The mailing list addresses are on the website. And yeah, if you are GNOME, Debian, and OpenMoko fan, come and ask me. I am in the room A04. Thanks.
Really loud enough, but I didn't realize.
Okay.
Unmounted or just plug it?
Yes, I'll bring it on.
It's okay?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm. Sorry for all this fuck up. Yeah.
Oh, no problem.
Am besten die PDF-Version, die ist neue.
Und dann
Test.
Das ist zu leise. Du darfst lauter sprechen. Ja?
Okay, I will try to talk very loud, so you guys can hear me.
Okay, wo ist
That's great.
Ich sehe jetzt gerade nicht vom Namen her das.
Richard Summit.
Hallo. Das folgt nicht.
This one.
Das war ja.
Okay, guys. As you can see on the slide, my name is Richard.
Hello.
Okay, I'll try to talk really loud right now. I want to welcome all of you to my short talk about WEFP. WEFP, well, it's a very short and hope a very, very impressive name for a web application fingerprinter. It's written in Ruby using SQLite 3 databases for its fingerprinting for its fingerprints. And, well, how does it work? It works by fetching static files from web applications. It's a bit like the one you may heard yesterday, if you attended the Lightning Talks yesterday, where there was a talk about fetching FEF icons and matching those checksums against the database. Well, WEF is going to fetch, or WEF fetches all static files contained for or contained within a web application, all JavaScripts, all PDFs, all HTML, XML files, and compress those checksums against the very huge database. And with the help of those matches, it calculates on what's the best match, and this way it's also able to identify sub-releases or minor releases, or even if it's alpha 1 or alpha 2 of a software. Well, why to write a tool like that? Because there was a need for it, and of course, automatic fingerprinting is always a cool thing. We all know of that from Nmap for basic network services or from NASA's. Because we need this data if we are going to perform vulnerability assessments or some other security testing, and we are facing about 2,000 web applications at a big customer or big government or something like that, and you want to fingerprint all those versions for all different web applications from remote without access to the servers, then something like that is really cool and really easy. You just fire it up, provide it all your URLs, and at the end, you will get all the versions, the products, and the sub-release versions of all web applications running there. That's an example output of all the options currently implemented. Well, it's not actual, because I added some new functions tonight. Yeah, the latest stuff can be found on the website. I will show you the URL in a few seconds. No matter. This is how a standard run looks like in some kind of verbose mode. There you can see that we provided a parameter for the product, because we know out of the URL, okay, it's a phpMyAdmin website. Then it's going to collect all the files, the static files, and the information about the checksums out of the database, the local fingerprinting database, and it's going to fetch all those files needed, matches those files against the database, and it has a match with 99.33% that it's phpMyAdmin 2.11.9.1, even if the installation is protected with the default authentication mechanism. Right now, there are more than 600 different versions in the database which we are able to identify. The products right now in the database are placed the FAF icons here, Typo3, FluxBB, Drupal, PHPBB, WordPress, and so on. That's one of the most important parts of the tool to fill the fingerprinting database. So if you're interested in something like that, or you have some spare time and you want to help in that project, I want to ask you and please you to help us to fill the database with valuable fingerprints. The most important things would be to have fingerprints of commercial content management systems or some closed source stuff. I will show you some more information later on. We can meet up after the talk. You can have a look at the website. And a warning at this point, it's still under heavy development. Even if it's working right now and it's working really good and really fast, you should not solely rely on the result of the tool right now. Yeah, we have a lot of new features planned. They are in the pipeline. You will find them on the websites, new fingerprints, more documentation. I plan to put some movies online, how-to movies on how to use it. You can get it over here on the website. Really simple, straightforward, mightydy.org/web. Well, thanks a lot. That's it. Get in contact.
Wenn du so zeigst, dass du immer direkt das weiß keiner.
Ist immer weg.
Okay. So, the next talks. We will hear from Michael and Georg. So, the next talk, we'll be hearing from Michael and Georg about libcpu and libhomebrew and about Yaxim. And after that, we'll hear about hackable devices. So, can I just see the... Ah, you're there. Good. So, we just have to find the PDF on a new... stick. The slides are very new, so we couldn't get them before the lightning talk session. So let's go.
Hallo? Test, test, test. Hallo, hallo? Okay. Okay. Okay, hello, my name is Michael Stahl. I'm going to talk about the libcpu binary translator, which is an LLVM-based binary translator. You might be familiar with binary translation, which is translating machine code from one machine language into another machine language. There's lots of examples nowadays. Pretty much every emulator has a translator from PowerPC M86K, MIPS to mostly x86, because that's what most people use. Okay. So what all these binary translators do is they convert something from a source language into a target language. The better ones, what they do is they have some intermediate representation and they can perform some optimizations on those, but very few of those of the binary translators that exist do that. But if you look at this intermediate representation to target recompilation, this is a very well understood problem, and pretty much every compiler does exactly that. So why not just use an existing compiler, for example LLVM, for the backend of a recompiler? And that's what the project is doing. We use LLVM, which is an existing compiler infrastructure. It has a C front end, it has a static recompiler, or it can do JIT, and it has a very nice intermediate representation on disk. So libcpu is a generic anything-to-anything recompiler, and you can just use it inside your own emulator as a CPU plugin. And this is how you would use it. You create your CPU. You can create many CPUs if you like. You can set some flags. You can set where the RAM is, and then you just give it an entry point and run it. And then it will exit when there's something that it doesn't understand or something that you have to handle, like a hardware access or a system call. So this is what we have. The core has lots of reusable code, all this code that every emulator needs. So we just provide that. And what someone else has to do is just write more front ends. We have two front ends right now, which are working pretty well. And you can just add more front ends. What is working right now is Motorola 88K. It's a not very well known architecture. But we can use pretty much anything from OpenBSD's user mode on top of libcpu. We have a complete 6502 front end. We can run Commodore 64 BASIC, and we've been working on other front ends as well. So we're not that complete, but we have something running. What we will be working, or what we are working on right now, is that those front ends will not be implemented in C, but be implemented in a description language like this. So you specify how the registers would work, how they are aliased, how everything is laid out. You would describe the operations like this. So this is a work in progress right now. So, yeah, if you're interested, look at our website. It launches right now. We have a wiki there. You might not be able to download the source code yet, but you can send us an email. If you're a recompiler developer and have worked with recompilers before, or if you work on emulators, if you want to use the library, or if you want to contribute in some way, look at our website and contact us. Thanks.
Yeah, hello, my name is Georg. I will be talking about another library. However, the progress of this one is not as far as one of the libcpu. My topic is libhomebrew, which is a generic homebrew system library. So, what's homebrew? Homebrew is a name for software you write for gaming consoles, which is not distributed using the official ways. So basically, you hack a console, and then you install some Tetris game or some emulators or different other things. The important idea is that you are not using the official software developer kit, you are not using the official distribution channels, and you are not paying big money to the vendor of the console. Usually, homebrew is, yeah, good examples are the ScumVM game engine for Lucasfilm games, which is ported to many game consoles, and I think another famous one is the Homebrew channel. You can also find its developers down in the Hack Center. So how does homebrew development work? First, of course, you need a gaming console. You have to hack it because usually the vendor is against such projects. They want to get some money for redistributing your games, so you have to hack the console. And then there are basically three very, very easy steps. First, you write the drivers for frame buffer, audio, devices, whatever you have. Then you port some libraries for displaying images, playing back videos, audio files, file system, devices, etc. And then you port or write games. In the gaming console homebrew scene, so far, most projects have spawned steps two and three from scratch because they were sitting there thinking, what could I add to my now started game console homebrew scene? And they started everything from scratch. So when you are there and you want to hack a new console, you have to redo these steps again and again and again. And this is where the idea of libhomebrew arose. We could separate the console-specific part into hardware abstraction layer modules, like it is done by operating system kernels and maybe in other situations too. And we could separate out the generic parts, which are basically a system library, a C library, maybe something like newlib, and support for things which are the same for all gaming consoles, like file system, network stacks, etc. So when you are going to port or to create homebrew for a new console, all you need is to write a HAL module for this libhomebrew. On the other hand, if you are going to write a game for a console, all you need is to support this one library, and your game will run with minor modifications on different kinds of consoles. However, this is just an idea. So what I would like to do is to find people who are maybe already developing software or porting libraries to different gaming consoles and to unite, because there are many different homebrew console projects so far, like libogc is a library for GameCube V development, libxenon is for the Xbox 360, and there are many, many other SDKs, libraries, etc. And in the first step, we just could find the similarities and extract a common, more abstract API. So different consoles and different SDKs can be used with the same applications. And then the abstraction of this whole thing can be increased. So we combine functionality, which is already there in different modules, into common ones. This would help game developers, obviously, because there will be one single library. But this will also help the homebrew hackers, because different libraries have to be ported and maintained only once and not for every console in separate. So far, we have a wiki page. Click it, go there, submit ideas. Thank you very much. We need your help. Hello, I'm still Georg. I would like to make another completely unrelated presentation. This one is about Yaxim. Yaxim is yet another XMPP instant messenger. So it is a Jabber application, which is running on the Android software platform. You might want to ask, why another instant messaging client? There are so many. However, the one with the best software support is the one provided by Google. And I don't know if you want to have the private conversation with your girlfriend stored on Google servers. I don't. On the other hand, there are so far no usable working open source Jabber clients for the Android platform. So obviously there had to be one. And all the non-open source clients suck more or less. They are usually bloated with useless graphics. They use up megabytes of your RAM and they got killed because they use so much memory and then they lose your connection and you are not reachable via Jabber. So obviously there's a need for yet another instant messaging client. So far, we have a working prototype. You can use it for jabbering around because we are using the Smack library as a backend. It is almost always keeping the connection. We are working on it for the last weeks. And it is easily usable. You can just download the Android package from our website. It is just 180 kilobytes in size. And yeah, on the right side, you can see how the roster looks like. Here are some more screenshots, a conversation on the left, and notifications also work. So when somebody writes you a message, you see a blinking LED on your phone. What we have to work on is mainly usability. So there are still aspects which have to be implemented, like displaying the status of your contact in the chat window. And the biggest project so far is a database backend. So we can store the whole conversation history. You can then read the messages you sent to somebody half a year ago, if you like. And another important feature we are going to support is to write messages while you are offline and send them to the server back when you connect. And of course, another thing is multi-account support, so you can use different Jabber IDs at the same time and multi-user chats. So far, mostly we need testers and maybe one or two another developers. The whole project is hosted on GitHub. There's a wiki, there is a bug tracker, you can download the source code, you can clone it. In the wiki, there's also a link to the binary download because GitHub downloads suck. And you can also contact us on IRC. We might switch to multi-user chats on Jabber someday when multi-user chat is also implemented in the client. Thank you very much.
Okay? Okay. So I'm Olivier André from Biasec. I am here to introduce you to hackabledevices.org or .com or .net as you wish. So the audience, hackabledevices.com or org. iCable devices, the audience. So, okay. As many of you, we fight for the free culture values for many years. After free software, free art, we think that the time has come for free hardware. But as hardware distributor, we also know that find the right piece of hardware and the right piece of information about it, it can be a real pain. And I'm polite. So, what can we do about it? And iCable devices is our answer to a very simple question. How can we help people to find what they need when they need to do do-it-yourself stuff or hack stuff? But first of all, who are we? We are BS Tech and KAD 85 teams. BS Tech is a worker self-management collective, in French, une collectivité, a coopérative, that works only with free software and distributes free hardware like Socris or OpenMoco. We know very well OpenMoco. We do iCable One distribution that was presented before by a friend. And we also host and support many free projects such as Freenode, OpenStreetMap, or SHR, another OpenMoco distribution. KAD85 and its founder, Wim van de Put, are well known to be a BSD maniac, but also distributing open source hardware like Socris, MakerBot, Traverse Card, and others. So we, all together, decide to create iCable devices. Of course, with only free software. iCable devices use a full Python stack. For the framework, we use Django, the powerful, the best framework, sorry, and PyNICE application collection for the content management. To deploy iCable devices, we release scripts that allow us, and you if you want, to rapidly change and maintain the Python environment. Everybody that knows Python knows that environment and Python are a real pain in the ass. So we try to make these things cooler. Of course, all the source are, or to be honest, will be released under AGPL V3. We just launched it during the Congress, so we are a bit late as usual. So if you have a project about do it yourself, hackable devices, hack. If you are a maker and looking for distribute your stuff easily, or if you are just curious or starving for knowledge about hack, free culture, freedom, or do it yourself, join us on iCableDevice.org. Help us to improve it. Help us to make it live. And we will see. So thank you for hearing. Sorry for my French, but that's what I am.
wissen wir Bescheid, wenn du hängst, machst mit Keule. Ja. Okay, nochmal einen Test. Und hat das Ding am Kind, man sei laut.
Okay, hörst du mich schon?
Das ist zu laut.
Hört ihr mich?
Besser.
Ja.
Richtig laut.
Okay.
Wenn du dich Feedback hörst und denkst, es ist zu laut, das kann ich.
Gut. Yeah, the talk is in English, so hello and welcome. The talk is about the Atari Coldfire project. I hope using the official Atari logo doesn't constitute copyright infringement. Well, I hope I get away with this. Our homepage is acp.atari.org. And our objective is to build a new Atari-compatible computer. Since Atari went into bankruptcy, I guess, in 1996, and there hasn't been an official Atari computer since 93. There have been some clones in the late 90s, and so we thought maybe new hardware would revive the Atari scene. We have been active since 18 months, have 37 members, hopefully some more after this talk. The project is open hardware. This means that the PCB schema is free. The cut files themselves, I don't think the person who made them will release them, but well, maybe we can lobby him into doing this. The software is open source, as far as it's possible, of course. I mean, like, TOS itself is owned and by Atari, but we've got some licenses for this. Okay. But the software we write ourselves, of course, will be open source. So, what has happened? Well, we have finished the design. People have done a mock-up. This is nice. And there have been prototypes built. Sweet prototypes have been finished. I even got one with me. So if you want to have some hands-on with this, you can come to me. And there's currently, well, what's currently going on is porting the software, and, well, we've made it boot, so this works. Now, what are the features of this computer? Currently, it's Atari ST compatible. That's happened in cooperation with the Project S, Suska. Maybe we're working also on Falcon compatibility, and it also only takes 3 to 5 watts power consumptions. So this blue thing here is a battery, and it can run from this. It's also got a PCI connector, so you can plug it into a backplane, and well, so you have adding cards. Coldfire processor, that's 860K compatible, FPGA, Altera Cyclone. That's where the custom chips are emulated. Well, USB, Ethernet, MIDI, DVI, compact flash, SD card, and the legacy Atari ports, extension headers, everything. Price tag is currently about 600 euros. We need you. We need you for what? Like if you have experience with TOS or Mint and can help porting it, we need you. People who have experience with FPGAs maybe can implement some video codecs in this. People who want to port Linux 68K to it, welcome. We are also planning on doing a case for it. Currently, yeah, we think we'll do a laptop with this. And so if people have access to thermoforming, plastic thermoforming factories, well, we need you too. Or if people can design this, we need you. And, well, you can contact us via acpinfo@atari.org. And the eternal fame of the Atari community will be yours. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
your turn.
I will. Okay, there's the button presentation. Okay, it's a bit...
Too late to change.
Yeah, all right. Hello, guys. Today, something different. Not about hacking, not about porn. Two big items of this conference, hacking and porn. So this is about something different, finance. How do you get finance for your project? My colleague yesterday has explained what an LNET was, but without any slides. And people normally accept visual information and not the audible. That's why we are here with the visual information. So, okay, is it loud enough now? So, we are NLNet Foundation, which was founded 10 years ago. Hackers for hackers. It was a number of million euros put in the foundation, and we are now financing the open projects in the domain of network and internet technology. So what we do? We do all kind of stuff, small projects, big projects, even sponsoring travel grants and much more. And we have a great network to help you with with your projects. And now 2 minutes workshop how to apply for money. Well, just go to our website, look around if you want, because there's lots of good information about our projects, about ourselves. Then just fill in the application form, like you write a mail to your friend saying, well, that's a great idea, I need this and this and this, and I need that much money. And then you just go send request, and it's in our system. So you can try now, if it's spam, we just throw that away, but it's really easy. Try it. And then you wait. Long waiting? No. Just, you can start as quick as within 5-6 weeks. We have a 2-month cycle because our board are all volunteers and they cannot consider the projects every day. That's why we are bundling them in 2 month benches, and then we consider them, and within 2 weeks you get your no, or you get the answer, your project is to the second round, and within the second 2 weeks you get definitely yes or no. That's easy like that, because we are independent, we get our own money, and try us. Try your network and internet-related projects with us. If you have any questions, we are here, third row on the bright side. Come to us, mail us, call us. The telephone number is on our website, and it's switched through to my mobile. So you're welcome.
This way.
Looks good.
Well, yeah, I had notes. I had notes written down. I don't know. This way, I thought. Okay, I'll try to manage anyway.
F5 was the one.
I started. Okay.
Okay. Mind you, put it to the chin. Leave it there. Have contact.
Okay.
Be loud.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, hello everybody. I'm Asaf Nativ from Israel. Is there anyone else from Israel here? I guess not. Anyone knows who said this sentence about it's only cheating if you get caught? It would buy you a beer? Okay. Okay, louder. No problem. Well, this is like the most lame thing I can talk about. It's like cheating on games on Facebook. It's like lame on lame on lame, and like, but it's a lot of fun, and yeah, I found it like more fun than like really playing the games and like, yeah. Okay, and I can the XKCD guy just said it so much better than I can ever say that, and like he's a genius, you know. Yeah, this is the point where you all laugh. Okay. So, okay, actually, it can be used for profit, as you say. People sell high scores on the internet for Facebook games. Apparently, Facebook just turned it to like illegal thing, like they would ban your account if they find you cheating on Facebook, but I'm doing it for a long time now, and I've got like the highest score in all the games between my friends earlier, and my account is still active, so I don't know. Yeah, Farmville is like become really, really popular game, and I just heard it got more active accounts than Second Life or World of Warcraft or so, but it sounds like really ridiculous, so I don't know if to believe that or not. Okay, the first, I'll try to go through five different techniques to cheating on games, on Flash games, but this would be like just the top of the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg. Like, there are so many other ways to do that. Like, some of them are so very easy to implement, and I hear about new ones all the time. It amazes me that what people would go through and what creativity people find when their aim is to cheat online. Yeah, it brings out the best of everyone. Okay, the first technique is like the most, I don't know, I call it like the old school technique where you just open the process of the Firefox or Explorer or whatever and just look for the, you play the game, you accumulate some points and then like searching for the exact amount of points in the entire memory and like accumulate more points and filter out the results until you're left with just one memory address and just change it to whatever you want, like. But it seems like Flash virtual machine is like storing the data in some encrypted or encoded way. I found out some people found out that it most of the time just multiplied it by 8. I'm not sure what it's supposed to mean. Like, why would anyone think it's multiplying by 8 is an encryption or so? I don't really get it. But yeah, if you're trying to cheat like using this technique, just if you're looking for an integer value, just multiply it by 8. And I found out that most of the time people use floating point variables, and they are more common than integers. That's it. Okay, there are some applications that people wrote for cheating. It's this one is called R4Z Cheater. I thought like this guy who wrote this, I thought like he must be a genius. He probably reverse engineered the entire virtual machine and got everything out and how everything is stored inside. But then I wrote to him and asked him for the source code, and like I looked at it, and it just uses the debugging API, so it's not that complicated. It's like really short program, and it would give you out all the variables that are found in the memory, like the names for the everything, and you just can go through them and change whatever you like. And but the problem with that is that this is an external program. You can run it inside the browser, And most of the games that are like for, made for Facebook are, oh, sorry. Well, they needed the entire browser environment to run, so I tried to inject it inside the browser process, and it kind of got wrong. I would talk to about it if anyone would be interested. Okay, there is... well, you can change the random number generator to always give you back the same result, and by that, turning every game to a really, like, really simple, no random in it. I won't go through that. And well, slowing everything down. There aren't that many ways in Windows to create time depending functions or so. If you can, I just hooked all the functions that you see here and everything start and set it to be slower, all of them, and it made it like everything go really slow. Like I open like the browser and all the ads around are started to move really slow and everything, and it made all the games really really easy. Disassembling SWF file, it's okay. There are many ways to do that. no time. Yeah. Okay, this is one of the best programs for decompiling Flash games that I found. And yeah, it's called Something. I'm really looking for any other tools to do that. If anyone know about anything that is good, I would love to hear about it. Well, and the most common technique that I see online that people put videos of on YouTube or stuff, and is writing bots and OCR programs that are really common, but it takes a lot of time writing those down. But yeah, it's like the most fun and everything. Okay, that's about five techniques. If anyone want to hear more about it, or anyone want to get a really high score in some game, I'll sell it for the half the price. And just some questions that I left open. Yeah, I got my Farmville account locked, but I've gotten like a cheat for Farmville, which is a server-side game, which makes it like a little bit more complicated. If anyone want to hear about it, I would love to tell you. And yeah, and that's it. Thank you.
Allô, allô?
Weiter mit dem Cursor einfach?
Space, würde ich sagen.
Space, und wie komme ich wieder zurück?
Page up.
Page down, okay.
Also Space geht runter und links.
Okay, gut.
Valerie? Sie macht noch ein Foto, deswegen müssen wir mal irgendwie gefilmt werden. Oliver muss noch die Zeit nehmen. Nehmen die Zeit. Okay, kleine Announcement macht sich durch.
Okay,
small.
Okay, ups. Everybody get on your marks. Right, we will now switch to German. So the following talks will all be in German. So if you don't understand German, you might consider getting some Mate. Anyway, we consider with German. We will return tomorrow. Please send us your slides. And the sooner we have them, the sooner they'll be on the stick and on the presentation PC, and we lose less time. Thank you very much. Okay, now next is hacking education.
Hallo, mein Name ist Alexander Ott. Ich komme von der Hochschule Bremen und ich wollte mit euch über Hacking Education sprechen. Oder auch Hacken ist einfach, wenn Umgebung und Tools stimmen. Ich selber hatte nie das Problem so richtig mit Hacken, bevor ich das mal einmal ausprobiert habe. Und dann musste ich einfach feststellen, es funktioniert einfach alles nicht. Es haut nicht richtig hin. Man weiß nicht so richtig, liest nun an einem selber. Man hat es gerade irgendwo gehört, man will es ausprobieren in seinem stillen Kämmerlein. Und es funktioniert wirklich gar nichts. Liegt's nun an mir selber, liegt's an den Tools, man weiß es einfach nicht. Es wäre gar nicht mal so schlecht, wenn man da eine Spielwiese hätte einfach, wo man das Ganze ausprobieren könnte. Und das bringt mich auch schon zum ersten Punkt. Und zwar das Problem, was ich mit den ganzen Hacking-Games hatte, die so in der Umgebung rumfliegen, ist, das sind Simulationen oder Emulationen. Das heißt, die bilden nicht wirklich die richtige Realität ab. Wir an der Hochschule Bremen haben uns deswegen nochmal zusammengesetzt und haben was entwickelt und dachten, wie können wir das jetzt irgendwie richtig hinkriegen, und haben dann NetSX, wird das geschrieben, NetS-X, das ist kurz für Network Security Experience und wird eigentlich NetSex gesprochen. NetSex baut auf eine normale, entweder virtualisierte oder physische Netzwerkumgebung, in der dann on-demand die ganzen Szenarios aufgebaut werden. Das heißt also, was ist ein Szenario? Ein Szenario ist einfach sozusagen der kleine Zwischenschritt, den man macht, das Hacken wirklich, das, wo es dann stattfindet. Und wenn wir uns das nochmal anschauen, also in der Topologie, dann ist das so, die Topologie kann sich auch verändern und es kann auch genau das Szenario gerade aufgesetzt werden. Das heißt, die Topologie ist in sich abgeschlossen. Das ist eigentlich eine Sandbox. Es kommt nichts rein und nichts raus. Erst wenn der Spieler sozusagen sein Szenario startet, dann geht's los. Das war es eigentlich auch schon. Vielen Dank für die Aufmerksamkeit. Das war Hacking Education von mir, Alexander Ott. Und erreichen könnt ihr mich über die Mailadresse mail@alexanderott.com oder über unsere Webseite. Danke.
Okay, just a quick look up. Ich kann jetzt auf Deutsch reden. Super. Also wir hören jetzt, wie man Raucher synchronisieren kann mit Technik. Danach etwas über Datenspuren, Datenwanderung und so wie es aussieht zum Schluss dann etwas über Geeks in der Geschichte. Also noch 3 Lightning Talks auf Deutsch.
Ja, ich bin der Korrupt. Andere kennen mich als Richie. Und wir haben auf der Arbeit ein Problem gehabt, das ich hier mit euch teilen möchte. Und zwar fällt es uns schwer, unsere Raucherpausen zu synchronisieren. Wir haben dafür ein relativ primitives Protokoll ausgearbeitet. Das habe ich vorläufig Basic Smoker Synchronization Protocol, abgekürzt BSSP, genannt. Das setzen wir auf einer Plattform ein, die ist relativ verbreitet, Skype, und es läuft auf dem OSI Layer 8. Das ist natürlich eben zum einen langsam, zum anderen fehleranfällig und für Standardisierungen meistens schwer empfänglich vermittelbar. Das Problem ist aber, ein Protokoll wie dieses muss aufgrund der fehlenden sozialen Akzeptanz für Raucher auf der Arbeit sehr effizient sein, sonst führt es zu Spannungen und Problemen. Wir haben eine primitive Syntax da uns überlegt, die besteht eigentlich nur aus einem Syn, einem Ack oder einem Nack. Das Syn fordert quasi zur Raucherpause auf. Wer mitmacht, gibt ein Ack zurück. Wer nicht mitmacht, ein Nack. Alternativ können noch Optionen Flex angehängt werden. Plus A ist hier angegeben. Das ist dann meistens einfach nur eine Minutenanzahl, wenn man nicht gleich, sondern erst in einer bestimmten Zeit rauchen gehen kann. Wir haben Beispiele, die funktionieren in der Regel prima, wenn es um kleine Zahlen und einfache Verhältnisse geht. Optimal natürlich, es kommt ein Syn, es kommt die Reaktion ACK, also zwei Leute haben erfolgreich kommuniziert, haben sich synchronisiert, können rauchen gehen. Es kommt im zweiten Beispiel ein Akt plus 5, das heißt, der zweite, der teilnimmt, hat erst in 5 Minuten Zeit. Da fangen die Probleme schon an, sind in diesem Kreis aber eigentlich noch relativ lösbar. Im dritten Fall wird es schon schwieriger, da sieht man auch schon, dass das Protokoll an seine Grenzen stößt, weil nicht mehr klar ist, ob Fubar sich mit seinen plus 5 jetzt auf Fu oder auf Bar bezieht. Im vierten Fall erkennt man schon aus den Timestamps, die Skype mitgibt, dass eine Synchronisation nicht mehr stattfindet, weil eben der dritte Akt quasi außerhalb der Zeitzone des angestrebten Synchronisationszeitpunkts liegt. Sprich, wir haben da ein Problem mit undefinierten Timeouts insbesondere. Zum anderen ist das Protokoll extrem unflexibel. Und wir kommen nicht da damit klar, größere Mengen an Rauchern zeitnah zu synchronisieren, ohne einen, man kennt es vielleicht auch von Dilbert, größere Gruppen von Personen zum die Mittagspause zum Essen zu bewegen, schlägt fehl. Wenn der letzte da ist, ist der erste schon wieder weg, erledigt noch was. Unsere Idee war bisher, dass wir einen fixen Zeitpunkt statt dieser flexiblen Lösung mit dem plus Minutenanzahl einsetzen, wodurch das Timeout und das Synchronisationsproblem gelöst wäre. Denn zu diesem fixen Zeitpunkt findet entweder die Synchronisation statt oder aber die anderen kriegen ein Timeout, sind nicht dabei, müssen den nächsten Syn abwarten. Man müsste nur einmal die Zeiten synchronisieren, da die Rechner und damit auch die eingesetzten Messenger-Protokolle meistens NTP-synchronisiert sind, dürfte das einmalig stattfinden. Anschließend haben alle dieselben Minutenzahlen, kann man sich Tipparbeit sparen, weil man keine Stunden etc. angeben muss. Wenn wir so das Protokoll vereinfacht haben, dachten wir, kann man eigentlich auch noch zusätzliche Features einbauen, ohne dass eben Effizienz und Kürze quasi verloren geht und man trotzdem noch relativ schnell die User da einbinden kann. Es ist immer ein bisschen ein Problem, wenn man da einen neuen User mit reinnimmt, bis man dem erklärt hat, was die Befehle bedeuten. Entsprechend einfach muss das Protokoll bleiben. Aber man kann da natürlich quasi noch abfragen, hat jemand anders Zigaretten, wenn ich keine habe, hat jemand anders Papers und so weiter. Gibt man im Beispielfall mit einem Syn 25 zum Zeitpunkt Stunde 25 Minuten, hat jemand Interesse an Raucherpause selber, aber keine Zigaretten, kommt ein Akt zurück zu dieser Stunde plus 25 Minuten, kann jemand mitgehen und bringt auch Kippen. Dasselbe funktioniert analog mit Papers, Tabak und Feuer. Die Standardisierung schon erwähnt, kurze Einlanddauer ist vonnöten. Wir brauchen eine Plattformunabhängigkeit, dass man es je nach eingesetzter Chat-Plattform auch anwenden kann. Wenn es dann verlässlich standardisiert ist, könnte man auf diese verschiedenen Plattformen zum Beispiel Plugins, entsprechende Smileys und so weiter, Buttons, Skriptbefehle dann eben reinpacken. Wenn das Ganze erweiterbar und skalierbar wird, denkbar ist ja natürlich, dass es mehrere Plätze gibt, an denen geraucht wird, dass mehr Leute da synchronisieren müssen, dass man vielleicht auch über längere Zeiträume Synchronisation schon vordefinieren will. Da gibt es ja das RFC 2550, das das Y10K-Problem beschreibt, also wie Zeitstempel über 10.000 Jahre auf Rechnern verlässlich adressiert werden können, könnte man da in diesem Rahmen gleich mit einbeziehen. Das Ganze ist nur noch etwas primitiv, wie gesagt. Es ist spontan entstanden aufgrund der Defizite, die wir in den letzten paar Wochen diesbezüglich erleben durften. Wir haben daher jetzt bisher nur einen Google Doc eingerichtet, auf dem wir das Ganze standardisieren wollen. Die Folien und ja, ich meine, ist noch relativ einfach zu finden auf der Corrupt-Bits, eine Kurzvorstellung finden sich bereits im Netz. Und was uns insbesondere interessieren würde, wären andere Anwendungsfälle. Also wir kennen es jetzt nur quasi aus der Skype-Umgebung, wo man, ich sag mal, eine Anzahl von ungefähr 4 bis 6 Leuten synchronisieren müsste. Es wäre halt interessant zu wissen, wie das in anderen Unternehmen, in anderen Gruppen quasi aussieht, wie das gehandhabt wird, was da vielleicht für Sonderfälle anfallen, auf die wir gar nicht gekommen sind, aber die man, wenn man schon mal einen Standard schaffen will, möglicherweise einbeziehen sollte. Was von meiner Seite, bedanke ich mich fürs Zuhören.
Okay, der nächste Talk von Toddy ist über Datenspuren, Datenwanderung. Dann etwas über das Chaoswerk. Ja? Okay. Und zu guter Letzt Geeks in der Geschichte.
seine Pings bin ich jetzt hier gesehen, aber du warst immer weg.
Deswegen. Ich war die ganze Zeit hier. Achso, ja.
Nein, ich kann ja, nicht noch antworten. Und jetzt wollte ich doch antworten und dann
war
ich
Internet. Ach, nichts, gut.
Du hast eben gesehen, daran halt
daran halt sprechen. Okay,
so. Hallo, ich bin Toddy, Thorsten Bremer. Ich möchte euch gerne was über mein Projekt erzählen, Datenspuren, Datenwanderung, in denen ich halt die Verbindungen in der Werbewirtschaft aufdecken möchte, die doch ziemlich im Verborgenen liegen. Meine persönliche Motivation und auch die Motivation dahinter steckt einfach, dass ich seit ungefähr 4 oder 5 Jahren eigentlich hinter jedem Werbeschreiben ein Auskunftsersuchen durch die Gegend schicke. Entsprechend viel Erfahrung habe ich auch. Ich habe die Erfahrung gemacht, dass sehr langsam geantwortet wird, manchmal auch falsch geantwortet wird. Man stößt auf wenig Verständnis. Ich habe mir schon mal einen Kopf werfen lassen müssen. Sie haben doch wohl zu viel Zeit, Herr Bremer. Die Quellen der Daten werden so gut wie möglich verschleiert. Am Ende kommen meistens raus, die Daten stammen irgendwo aus Luxemburg oder aus irgendeiner italienischen Enklave in der Schweiz. Daten werden trotz Widerspruchs nach wie vor weitergegeben und ich habe die Erfahrung gemacht, das, was die mir eigentlich antworten, ist meistens nicht überprüfbar. Das deutsche Datenschutzgesetz ist leider nur ein stumpfes Schwert, das mit dem Listenprivileg, und alles, was ich mache und vielleicht auch einige von euch machen, sind eigentlich nur Einzelaktionen, die nicht sonderlich koordiniert oder vernetzt sind. Das Bundesdatenschutzgesetz, wie gesagt, bevorzugt halt die Werbeindustrie über das Listenprivileg. Das heißt, eure Daten dürfen gehandelt werden, werden gehandelt werden, solange es sich nur um eure Adressen handelt. Die Werbefirmen müssen, solange sie mit dem Listenprivileg arbeiten, euch nur wenige Auskünfte geben. Und die ganze Aufklärung, aber die ihr selber leisten könnt, geht eigentlich nur davon, dass ihr von der Quelle, dass ihr vom Werber hin zur Quelle geht. In diesem Fall ein Beispiel, Kabel Deutschland. Die haben alleine 4 Schreiben gebraucht, bis sie überhaupt geantwortet haben, hat von AZ Direct gekauft, die haben von der Director GmbH gekauft, das ist irgend so eine kleine obskure Werbeklitsche in Nordrhein-Westfalen auf dem Bauernhof, und die haben mir gesagt, ja, wir haben es irgendwo aus Luxemburg her, danke. Aber an welche Kunden AZ Direct oder die Director meine Daten noch verkauft haben, müssen sie mir nicht nennen, nennen sie mir natürlich auch nicht, und das möchte ich gerne aufdecken. Die Projektidee ist einfach Aufdecken der ganzen Verpflichtung, wer kauft von wem. Die Qualität der Antworten möchte ich aufdecken, das Sichtbarmachen von den ganzen systematischen Verstößen, das Anprangern der unseriösen Firmen. Und ich möchte durch diese Öffentlichkeit, die dadurch erzeugt wird, Druck auf die Adresssammler und die Kunden aufbauen. So eine Wunschidee ist natürlich, dass die Werbetreibenden sich vorher überlegen, aus welchen Quellen sie ihre Adressen aus Imagegründen kaufen. Vielleicht klappt das dann ja auch. Durchführen kann man das eigentlich nur dadurch, indem man viele, viele, viele Einzelauskünfte sammelt. Von euch allen, von sonst wem. Und dadurch Rückschluss auf andere Kunden, der Händler möglich ist. Zum Beispiel in meinem Beispiel wieder, dass die Richtung Kabel Deutschland über AZ, über die Direkte aus Luxemburg. Und jemand anders sagt, ja, ich habe von XYZ Werbung bekommen. Die haben auch von AZ direkt und die haben von ACME gekauft. Das ist dann schon eine Verflechtung, die dadurch aufgedeckt werden wird, indem man halt zwei Richtung Routen halt zusammenführt. Das Ganze hat natürlich einige Probleme. Es ist damit zu rechnen, dass die Adressvermarkter natürlich juristischen Widerstand machen, weil die möchten vermutlich nicht, dass man das aufdeckt. Das Projekt selber verarbeitet natürlich sehr viele personenbezogene Daten. Wir müssen alles sammeln. Und wir brauchen viele, viele, viele Auskünfte. Das bedeutet natürlich Aufwand. Um den Widerständen der Adressvermarkter vorzubeugen, müssen wir mit Fakten, Fakten, Fakten arbeiten. Wir müssen selber den Datenschutz beachten. Das heißt, wir müssen prinzipiell alles belegen in dem Projekt. Es ist wünschenswert, dass es halt einen Zusammenschluss von mehreren Organisationen gibt, zum Beispiel dem Chaos Computer Club, dem Föbot, Forum Informatiker für Frieden und gesellschaftliche Verantwortung, der FIF und auch der Deutschen Vereinigung Datenschutz. Die FIF zum Beispiel ist mit im Boot. Föbot habe ich auch schon recht gute Kontakte zu Padelun und Rena Tangens gehabt, und das Projekt braucht viele Mitstreiter, weil es wird vermutlich relativ viel Arbeit. Aber ich denke, dass es trotzdem möglich ist. Na, die siebte, da. So, wenn jemand Fragen hat, das Projekt ist schon in ersten Grundzügen unter datenspuren.net online, mit dem, was ich vorhabe, was wir wollen. Oder wenn es funktioniert, unter der neuen 313 oder draußen auf dem CR-Zert-Stand oder unten beim Chaos-Treff Göttingen. Danke.
Sehr schön. Viel Glück damit. Ich hoffe, das funktioniert. Chaoswerk, Chaos-Treff, Halle, Saal. Jetzt ist mein Anfang.
Ah, okay, ja, oder? So von wegen Dista?
Ja.
Wenn du dich nicht, also wenn du dich nicht selbst hörst, dann ist es zu leise.
Ja.
Okay. Lass es am Kinn.
Test, Test. Hört ihr mich? Sieht so aus. Gut, hallo erstmal. Mein Name ist Marco Leixenring. Marco, kennt mich da unter mehreren Namen. Ich wollte ein bisschen was erzählen. Ich hatte jetzt eigentlich vor, dem nächsten Chaos-Treff in Halle Saale zu gründen. Ich habe mit einem Kumpel zusammen beschlossen, ja, wir nennen das jetzt das Chaoswerk. Wir arbeiten auch mit einem anderen Verein zusammen, der nennt sich Terminal 21. Könnt ihr mal ein bisschen googeln, es gibt ein paar richtig coole Sachen über die. Die haben auch viele Projekte, die haben sich zum Beispiel ein Heizkraftwerk gemietet in Halle Saale und genau dort wollen wir auch den Chaos-Treff stattfinden lassen. Also wir arbeiten direkt mit denen zusammen. Ja, dann fangen wir mal an. Wie kam es eigentlich zu der Idee? Naja, Halle, ist eigentlich nicht viel los. Man kann es wirklich so sagen, in Halle ist im Prinzip nichts. Es gibt eine hallische Linux-User-Group, da bin ich auch Mitglied. Und ja, dadurch habe ich halt auch schon ein paar Leute kennengelernt, die da dann auch direkt gleich mitmachen wollen. Und ja, mit dem Chaoswerk wollen wir das alles ein bisschen beleben. Das ist Terminal 21, hier seht ihr die Homepage. Könnt ihr mal drauf gucken. Das Ganze läuft unter dem eigenen Projekt Heizwerk. Allerdings fand ich das nicht sehr aussagekräftig. Naja, und auf alle Fälle, wir werden da zumindest in dem Heizkraftwerk, das sie sich gemietet haben, relativ viel guten Platz haben. Und da kann man sicher eine Menge machen. Ja, das soll jetzt alles demnächst richtig anlaufen. Also ist es geplant, dass jetzt im Februar die meisten Bauarbeiten direkt abgeschlossen sind. Also als letztes wurde da jetzt das Dach gemacht, da sind sie jetzt noch ein bisschen am Rumwursteln, bis das dann endlich alles richtig fugendicht ist und es nicht mehr durchregnet. Aber es sieht alles eigentlich schon ganz gut aus. Ein paar kleinere Sachen sind noch gemacht. Wir suchen auch noch dringend nach Ausrüstung, nach kleineren Sachen. Um da jetzt alles drauf einzugehen, ich glaube, dafür habe ich ja nicht genug Zeit. Könnt ihr mich nachher mal fragen. Ja, und demnächst geht's halt los. Zurzeit sieht's halt so aus. Wir hätten insgesamt zurzeit schon 3 Leute und mich, die wir da alle zusammen mitmachen. Dadurch, dass wir mit dem Terminal 21 zusammenarbeiten, sind halt aus der Ecke dann auch noch viele Leute dabei, die dann gleich mitmachen. Aber wir sind halt trotzdem noch am Gucken, dass noch mehr Leute dazukommen, weil 3 Leute ist nicht so der Hit auf lange Sicht. Ja, und vielleicht kennt ihr ja irgendwen, vielleicht kommt der Enner sogar zufälligerweise auch aus Halle. Und ja. Oh. Bin ja schon am Ende. Ja, anscheinend wurde nicht das aktuelle PDF hier rüber. Ja, gut. Okay, also wenn ihr noch Fragen habt, ich werde hier vermutlich noch ein bisschen rumtüdeln hier. Moin und heute. Könnt ihr mich einfach ansprechen oder ihr schreibt mich mal im Jabber an. Das ist malkor@jabber.ccc.de. Vielleicht lässt sich das hier noch schnell... oder auch nicht. Ja.
So, next speaker will be Florian here. So, Florian will be the last speaker of today, unless you have a few quick announcements, like I will do now. So, while he's setting up, let me please ask you for some feedback. So, within the Pentabuff system, you can click on feedback. Please do that. Please leave a message there. This will be viewable by everyone, I think. If you want to give personal feedback, please send it to 26c3@lightningtalks.de. Please also join us on Freenode in the chat. This time I'll just reference the IRC page in the wiki. Please take a look there for further information. We're looking for volunteers for next year. As we've we found out that two guys are not enough. Actually, we have Valerie here to take photos. Thank you very much. There's Julius down there taking the times. So we actually see how long the duration will lasting. And we need some help with the presentation PC. And as it hasn't been available to us on day zero, we would like to ask for a sponsor. So if you have a sponsor for his PC, we're not talking about giving this away for free to donate it. Just lend it to us on day zero, then we can get together and test all the, prepare the PC so it's really prepared. Another idea we have for next year is that we do a workshop for speakers. So basically, you can come on a day in the afternoon and give your presentation to us and the other speakers, and we can give you feedback before it all happens. We can get a copy of your slides. We can look at the photos. We can look out for typos and whatnot. So in the afternoon, we shall have a meeting for speakers. Then, just to remind you, tomorrow evening, after last day, there will be a party down the road, Jan Witzbrücker, at Seabase. So after the closing ceremony, please come over and join us and talk to us. Give us some feedback there, too, if you can. And if you haven't heard, there on the last day of the year, there will be a journey to the end of the night. That's a game that you can participate with. They've been doing this in San Francisco and twice now in Vienna, where Florian also comes from. And I hear it's a lot of fun, and everybody can join. And it's basically about getting to, you have to run to some endpoint via some places which are called check marks, and you can get caught, and when you get caught, then you become a catcher. And take a look at it. It's probably on the wiki there at my user page, user:gukas. Take a look. There's a link. And now for the last talk of today, unless you speak up and come to us up front. Florian, it's all yours now.
Danke. Geht das so?
Ja.
So, ja. Ja, also ich habe mir gedacht, ich halte mal was nicht Technisches. Ich bin zwar jetzt als Informatiker berufstätig unterwegs, aber gedacht, nachdem ich ja noch was anderes studiere, bringe ich mal was irgendwie zwar auch geekig ist und einen wesentlichen Einfluss auf unsere Geschichte gehabt hat, aber halt nichts direkt Technisches ist. Und wie wir schon alle gelesen haben wahrscheinlich, ist Geeks und Nerds eine Geschichte. Ich habe ein paar Leute ausgewählt, so dass das halt in 4 Minuten ausgeht, die wir heute wahrscheinlich als Geeks bezeichnen würden. Und die einen meiner Meinung nach maßgeblichen Einfluss auf die Technologie und unsere Geschichte gehabt haben. Das wäre erstens natürlich jener Herr, also jeder, der irgendwie in der Schule war, hat von dem schon gelernt. Wesentlich ist, dass er zum Beispiel die Stellenwerte in der Mathematik eingeführt hat, was für uns heute ganz selbstverständlich ist. Wir uns aber das gar nicht mehr vorstellen könnten, dass man rechnen kann ohne Stellenwerte. Und ja. Es ist von der von den Geburtsdaten her, es ist in der Antike leider aus quellentechnischer Gründe immer etwas schwieriger. Und das wirklich Tragische an dem Herrn ist eigentlich, dass ja die Stadt Syrakus belagert und eingenommen wurde und er eigentlich verschont hätte werden sollen, weil man gewusst hat, dass es eher sinnvoll ist, wenn man sich den warm hält quasi, aber ein römischer Legionär den leider aufgrund dieses unten genannten Spruches einfach mal ja dezent umgebracht hat. Und das wissen wir leider nicht, was uns alles entgangen ist, nachdem den leider so schnell einer eliminiert hat. Der zweite war ein sehr interessanter Herr, Heron von Alexandria. Aufgrund der Quellenlage wissen wir leider bis auf 500 Jahre genau nicht, wann er gelebt hat. Wir wissen nur wo. Die Bibliothek ist leider inzwischen auch abbrennt, aber der war sicher einer der vielseitigsten Techniker in der Antike und hat unter anderem automatische Türen für Tempel gebaut, die erste Programmiersprache entwickelt mit Schnüren, wo der Schnüre um Balken gewickelt hat und dort Nägel eingeschlagen hat. Und je nachdem, wo der Nagel war und wie lang die Schnur war, hat es eine andere Verzögerung gegeben und der hat damit Fahrzeuge fahren lassen. Gibt's, hat man dann nachgebaut, inzwischen gibt's. Und er hat eben auch die Ersatz von Ausbreitung des Lichts, also das Licht, das zeitoptimierter Weg immer zwischen zwei Punkten ist. Das ist aber erst 1622 dann nochmal dokumentiert worden. Und er war auch der erste Erfinder einer funktionierenden, da sieht man da, einer funktionierenden Dampfmaschine in der Antike, die er auch eingesetzt hat, um Tempeltüren zu öffnen und zu schließen. Und was sehr interessant daran ist, warum das eigentlich bis ins 19. Jahrhundert gedauert hat, bis jemand draufgekommen ist, dass so eine Dampfmaschine vielleicht doch eine ganz praktische Erfindung ist und dass man das durchnutzen kann. Der nächste Herr wäre der Herr Al-Khwarizmi, nachdem auch der Begriff des Algorithmus, also Algorithmus benannt ist. Und ja, der führte die Zahl 0, die Dezimalstellen aus der indischen in die arabische Mathematik und damit auch in unsere Mathematik ein und hat ein Buch geschrieben über Algebra, beziehungsweise eine der frühesten Weltkarten eigentlich gezeichnet auch, die wir kennen. Ja. Den kennt wahrscheinlich auch jeder, Leonardo da Vinci. Wahrscheinlich im 15. 16. Jahrhundert einer der führenden Bildhauer, Maler, Techniker, der damals schon Anfang des 16. Jahrhunderts für einen Sforza, also Fürsten in Italien, für einen Fürsten einen Roboter entwickelt hat, der leider nur in Aufzeichnungen, also gezeichnet erhalten ist, aber nicht als Gerät. Und er gilt als einer der umfassendst tätig und gebildeten Techniker bis dato. Also sagen wir mal, wenn der kein Geek war, wer war es dann? Und der hat auch extrem viele, eben Mona Lisa ist bekannt, das Abendmahl ist bekannt. Ja. Der vorletzte, hat schon vor dem Nikola Tesla, im damaligen Österreich noch geboren, heute gehört es irgendwie zu Kroatien, und der hat insofern Wesentliches beigetragen, weil er erstens den ersten Radiosender betrieben hat mit seinem Turm und andererseits den Wechselstrom entdeckt hat und propagiert hat, leider sehr zum Missfallen des Herrn Edison, der den Gleichstrom propagiert hat. Das Problem ist, dass der Herr Edison zwar der schlechtere Techniker war, aber der bessere Verkäufer. Weswegen der Herr Tesla leider bis vor einigen Jahren eher in Vergessenheit geraten ist und leider auch eher verarmt gestorben ist. Aber ich würde mal sagen, der war auch für die damalige Zeit ziemlich geekig und hat die Informatik ja durch die Entwicklung des Wechselstroms eigentlich erst möglich gemacht. Und last but not least, der Herr Fleming, der ist wahrscheinlich nur insofern ein Geek, als dass er extrem gut studiert hat und extrem gut seine Schule absolviert hat. Er war aber sehr, sehr interessiert an Medizin und Bakteriologie und hat mehr durch Zufall das Penicillin entdeckt, weil wahrscheinlich 100 Leuten schon aufgefallen ist, dass da komische Sachen wachsen in der Schale und das ist ganz furchtbar, das haut jetzt Experiment zusammen und die wahrscheinlich alle weggehaut haben. Nur der hat sich immer überlegt, was mache ich jetzt damit? Und warum ist neben dem Pilz plötzlich nichts anderes mehr? Und ist mir drauf gekommen, dass es vielleicht eine gute Idee ist, weil bakterielle Krankheiten man damit gut behandeln kann und hat dafür auch dann den Medizinnobelpreis bekommen. Das Interessante ist aber, dass er es nur entdeckt hat, die erste Anwendung von Penicillin als Medikament war vom Howard Walter Florey, der mit ihm zusammen den Nobelpreis bekommen hat, damit man das auch wirklich als Medikament einsetzen können. Ja. Das Interessante daran ist, also meine Konklusion daraus war, dass diese Entwicklungen alle von Einzelpersonen gemacht wurden, die von ihrer Zeit teilweise unverstanden waren, wie zum Beispiel Tesla oder auch Archimedes, und die aber einen wesentlichen Beitrag geleistet haben zu unserer Geschichte und zu unserer Zeit, und dass offensichtlich leider, auch ein Beispiel von meinem Tesla, die technische Qualifikation und die Tatsache, dass man Recht hat, nicht immer unbedingt zu einem glücklichen und halbwegs sorgenfreien Leben führen muss. Sollte sich irgendjemand dafür interessieren oder genauere Informationen haben wollen zu eben antiken Robotern oder sonst was, kann er mich unter der E-Mail-Adresse kontaktieren oder, wenn er mich sieht, einfach ansprechen. Ja, danke.
Okay, thank you very much. This is it for today. I hope you'll be back tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, please just give us feedback. send this mail to 26c3@lightningtalks.de. Thanks and see you tomorrow.